For the men who ruled the CIA, Afghanistan was acknowledged as the main catalyst that helped trigger these historic changes. Flush with the glory of tumbling dominoes and convinced that the Afghan campaign had been the key to it all, the Directorate of Operations moved to recognize the man who had made it possible. Without Charlie Wilson, Director Woolsey said in his comments, history might have been hugely different, and sadly different. It wasn't the parade that Charlie had sought, but then no other member of Congress, indeed no outsider, had ever been singled out by the CIA for such an accomplishment. If that's where it all had ended for Charlie Wilson, standing tall at Langley that day with the fear of nuclear war fast receding and America now the world's only superpower, then it truly would have been a Cold War fairy tale come true. But that's not the way that history works. Inevitably, great events have unintended consequences. What no one involved anticipated was that it might be dangerous to awaken the dormant dreams and visions of Islam, which is, of course, exactly what happened. There were many early warnings well before Charlie's award at Langley. In January of that year, a young Pakistani, Mir Amal Qasi, walked down the line of cars at the gates of the CIA and calmly murdered two officers before escaping to Pakistan, where he was embraced as a folk hero. The month after Qasi's shooting spree at the CIA in February 1993, the World Trade Center was bombed. What emerged from the smoke was a clear indication that some of the veterans of the Afghan campaign now identified America as their enemy. As early as a year before at Khost, a haunting portrait of the future was already in place. Battle-hardened Afghan mujahideen, armed to the teeth and broken down into rival factions, one of the largest being a collection of Arab and Muslim volunteers from around the world. Pakistan's former intelligence chief, Hamid Gul, maintains that over the course of the jihad, up to 30,000 volunteers from other countries had come into Pakistan to take part in the Holy War. What now seems clear is that under the umbrella of the CIA's program, Afghanistan had become a gathering place for militant Muslims from around the world, a virtual Mecca for radical Islamists. The man Charlie described as goodness personified, Jalaluddin Haqqani, had long been a gateway for Saudi volunteers, and for years the CIA had no problem with such associations. Osama bin Laden was one of those volunteers, who could frequently be found in the same area where Charlie had been Haqqani's honored guest. As the CIA's favorite commander, Haqqani had received bags of money each month from the station in Islamabad. In the aftermath of 9/11, he would emerge as the number three target of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. As early as the Gulf War, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, long the main recipient of CIA weaponry, had articulated his belief that the United States was seeking world domination and control of Muslim oil. After the events of 9/11, he too became a target of his old patron when the CIA attempted to assassinate him with a Hellfire missile launched from an agency-controlled Predator drone. Like the attempts on Haqqani and bin Laden, the lack of success only enhanced the aura of invincibility surrounding those seen as enjoying Allah's protection. The presumption at Langley had been that when the United States packed its bags and cut off the Afghans, the jihad would simply burn itself out. If the Afghans insisted on killing one another, it would be a shame, but not America's problem. Perhaps that policy would have worked out had it been only weapons that we left behind. But the more dangerous legacy of the Afghan War is found in the minds and convictions of Muslims around the world. To them, the miracle victory over the Soviets was all the work of Allah, not the billions of dollars that America and Saudi Arabia poured into the battle, not the 10-year commitment of the CIA that turned an army of primitive tribesmen into techno-holy warriors. The consequence for America having waged a secret war and never acknowledging or advertising its role was that we set in motion the spirit of jihad and the belief in our surrogate soldiers that, having brought down one superpower, they could just as easily take on another. The question that has puzzled so many Americans, why do they hate us, is not so difficult to understand if you put yourself in the shoes of the Afghan veterans in the aftermath of the Soviet departure. Within months, the U.S. government discovered what it had known for the past 8 years, that Pakistan was hard at work on the Islamic bomb. But with the Russians gone, sanctions were imposed and all military and economic assistance was cut off. The fleet of F-16s that Pakistan had already purchased was withheld. Within a year, the Clinton administration would move to place Pakistan on the list of state sponsors of terrorism for its support of Kashmiri freedom fighters. The Pakistan military had long been the surrogates for the CIA, and every Afghan and Arab mujahid came to believe that America had betrayed the Pakistanis. And when the United States kept its troops, including large numbers of women in Saudi Arabia, not just bin Laden, but most Islamists believed that America wanted to seize the Islamic oil fields and was seeking world domination. By the end of 1993, the six-year-old cross-border humanitarian aid program, the one sustained U.S. effort to create an infrastructure and blueprint for the rebuilding of Afghanistan, was cut off. The University of Nebraska educators who ran part of the program had appealed to the Clinton administration for funds to at least warehouse the large store of textbooks that had already been printed, but even this was denied. There were no roads, no schools, just a destroyed country, and the United States was washing its hands of any responsibility. It was in this vacuum that the Taliban and Osama bin Laden would emerge as the dominant players. It is ironic that a man who had had almost nothing to do with the victory over the Red Army, Osama bin Laden, would come to personify the power of the jihad. In 1998, when bin Laden survived $100 million worth of cruise missiles targeted at him, it reinforced the belief that Allah had chosen to protect him against the infidels. Ironically, one of those cruise missiles struck the very spot where Charlie had slept in Haqqani's camp. It's not what Charlie Wilson had in mind when he took up the cause of the Afghans. Nevertheless, in spite of 9/11 and all the horrors that have flowed from it, he steadfastly maintains that it was all worth it, and that nothing can diminish what the Afghans accomplished for America and the world with their defeat of the Red Army. I truly believe that this caused the Berlin Wall to come down a good 5, maybe 10 years before it would have otherwise. Over 1 million Russian Jews got their freedom and left for Israel. God knows how many were freed from the gulags. At least 100 million Eastern Europeans are breathing free today, to say nothing of the Russian people. It's the truth, and all these people who are enjoying those freedoms have no idea of the part played by 1 million Afghan ghosts. To this day, no one has ever thanked them. They removed the threat we all went to sleep with every night, of World War III breaking out. The countries that used to be in the Warsaw Pact are now in NATO. These were truly changes of biblical proportion, and the effect the jihad had in accelerating these events is nothing short of miraculous. These things happened. They were glorious, and they changed the world. And the people who deserved the credit are the ones who made the sacrifice. And then we fucked up the endgame. The story of Charlie Wilson and the CIA's secret war in Afghanistan is an important missing chapter of our recent past. Ironically, neither the United States government nor the forces of Islam will want this history to be known. But the full story of America's central role in the Afghan jihad needs to be told and understood for any number of reasons. Clearly, it's not helpful for the world of militant Islam to believe that its power is so great that nothing can stop it. But the danger exists for us as well. It may not be welcomed by a government that prefers to see the rising tide of Islamic militancy as having no connection to our policies or our actions. But the terrible truth is that the group of sleeping lions that the United States roused may well have inspired an entire generation of militant young Muslims to believe that the moment is theirs. To call these final pages an epilogue is probably a misnomer. Epilogues indicate that the story has been wrapped up, the chapter finished. This one, sadly, is far from over. This concludes the reading of Charlie Wilson's War by George Crile, copyright 2003 by George Crile. This book was read by Christopher Lane. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Grove Atlantic Press and was produced in 2003 by Blackstone Audiobooks Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audiobooks. If you would like to obtain a complete catalog of our titles or our monthly update telling you about new releases and our new collection of books on CD, write Blackstone Audio Books, P.O. Box 969, Ashland, Oregon, zip 97520, or call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com. Thank you.